Shareholder rights advocates say corporations need to make their boards much more independent to improve management accountability and to avoid potential conflicts of interest. But it turns out there may be another reason to break up the clubby atmosphere of the boardroom. Brian Utzi has been studying the dynamics of successful teams. He's a professor of leadership and sociology at Northwestern University's Kellogg School of Management. He teamed up with colleagues from different disciplines to try to understand what separates the really successful teams from the not-so-successful ones. He began his study by turning to Broadway musicals.
Broadway turns out to be a really great place to study these things. And it turns out that Broadway musicals have all the same dynamics, but they tend to be simplified on certain dimensions. So when you start to look at teams, one thing happens to be team size. Well, it turns out in Broadway, almost all teams are about the same size. They're made up of six creative artists, the choreographer, the director, the producer, etc. So it's simplified on that dimension. The other thing that made Broadway musicals a great thing to study is that you can go back through the entire historical record, right back to the first Broadway musical ever produced in the late 1800s called Old Nellie, right up into the current period, and you can reconstruct the networks of everyone who's worked with everybody else directly from playbill data. And this data has been collected by aficionados who have some kind of day job, and in the evening they write these volumes where they go through the playbills and they record everybody who's worked with everybody else. In fact, one person did something pretty amazing in terms of from a research perspective. They went back and they looked at everyone who worked with everybody else on musicals that never actually make it to Broadway. So it's a very well-documented industry. And I'd say the last thing that made it excellent to study is that in our business, we talk about dependent variables. These are the performance outcomes that you're interested in. And Broadway has two that are well accepted and well measured. And that is the Broadway musical a financial success? And how does it do with critics who don't care about its financial success but care about what kind of leaps forward it may make artistically? And those two things can be highly associated with each other, or they can go in opposite directions.
So as you looked at the data from Broadway musicals and the team dynamics, and you looked at the success that those teams had as it relates to not just critical acclaim, but also the financial success of the shows, you also combined that with lots of other data sets. And what did you find out were the keys to successful teams?
The way to think about our model is in the following way. People have studied team composition and diversity and other things that make teams tick for a long time. But the thing that's been missing is that in a lot of industries, you can't just study the team itself, that is the five people that make up the team, but you have to study how the five people on the team are tied to other people in the industry that they've worked with in the past. In the sense that when you enter a team, you bring the history of your relationships, your experience, and your ties to other people with you to that team. You have points of view on how to look at incomplete pieces of data and make inferences about what's missing and what kind of conclusions you should draw from that that'll be different from other individuals. And so what you're trying to capture when you study this large systemic level network of all the different teams put together through time is you're trying to capture the diversity of those points of view and those that experience that different members bring with them. And the network is a way of capturing it so that you know where those different pockets of diversity are and who's carrying different ideas.
So it's diversity in context, perspectives, ideas, all of that is coming and informing the collective action of any given team.
That's right. That's right. And as a team embedded in this larger network, the creative resources and material that you draw on is dependent on what other people are doing simultaneously in that network.
And what kinds of conclusions did you come up with?
If you simplify it, you can have two kinds of people that work together. And we'll just call them newcomers and incumbents. And the newcomers are people who are kind of fresh. They're coming into the industry for the first time. They're rookies. They're inexperienced, etc. And incumbents are people who have been in the industry. They've worked on a project with other individuals. They're more experienced. They may have higher status, etc. And so the choices that people make are essentially, do I work with an incumbent or do I work with a newcomer when I start to put a team together? When you work on your first team and then you go to work on your second team, there's a very high probability you'll choose someone to work with that you worked with on your first team.
Sure, you know them, you're familiar with them, and you say, hey, I'd love to have that person work with me.
Right, it makes a lot of sense. And if you don't choose those people, the next most probable person you'll choose is not someone you've worked with in the past, but someone who's worked with the people you've worked with in the past.
Right.
So friends of friends choose friends, basically. And then if you don't choose one of those two, then you choose a complete stranger. And over time, as you follow people and you follow how these networks are developing with lots of people all making these decisions, they push move very consistently in the direction of always choosing a smaller and smaller set of people that you've worked with.
And based on your research, that's not a good path to pursue.
It turns out to be a bad thing. And a great example comes from Broadway. So if you look at Broadway over its entire period, about 3/4 of the shows fail. That is, they don't make money. The highest failure rate in all of Broadway's history was in the 1919 to 1930 season, where the failure rate was about 90%. But here's the interesting thing. If you look at the talent that made the shows during the 1919 to 1930 season, it's really a set of some of the greatest individual talent the world has ever known. So Cole Porter made 2 shows, Richard Rodgers and Lorenz made 12 shows, Oscar Hammerstein made 13 shows, Irving Berlin made 1 show, etc., etc. Why did this fail when you had such great individual talent? Well, this was also the point in the network when you had the highest density, that is, you had the most cliquish groups working together. The point comes back to this thing: how does the network affect people? Well, when it becomes very highly cliquish, it tends to shut down creativity.
You say that, by contrast, an excellent example of a network and a Broadway production that was very successful because of its team dynamic is the West Side Story. What is it about West Side Story as a team that makes this such an instructive example?
The thing about West Side Story is that it was a very good mix of a couple of people who had worked together in the past, like Harold Prince and Stephen Sondheim. It was some people who hadn't worked together before. A choreographer named Peter Gennaro was part of that group. And then there were some people who had worked in the industry on other productions but hadn't worked with either Prince or Sondheim. So you had this very diverse mix of people who had repeated relationships, incumbents who had never worked with each other before, and some newcomers. And when you look at that pattern, you find out that this tends to be a winning formula for creativity.
So as a professor of leadership, what advice would you give to team leaders who are making hiring decisions about who to add to their various teams?
I think the biggest thing for a manager inside an organization is that most people, following their natural tendencies, allow the teams to be built based on too much familiarity and cohesion, the things you were talking about earlier, about, yeah, I want to work with my friends because I know what it's like to work with them in the past. But that tends to be not the dimension to maximize on if it undercuts the dimension of diversity. And here, diversity should not be seen necessarily in terms of gender and race, which have always been proxies for diversity on the dimensions that we've talked about, where diversity here is really experience, ways of viewing the world, ways of making inferences from incomplete data.
And what effect has this project and this research had on your own thinking and work with teams at the university?
Well, you know, it's pretty profound, actually. You know, when I started to think about this, I took a chance on a collaboration I don't think I would have taken a chance on before, and that is with a couple of my colleagues here at Northwestern, Luis Amaral and Roger Guimera, who worked on the body of this work with me. And they're both physicists. And it's pretty unusual for a sociologist to work with a physicist. But both of us, that is, Amaral and me, felt that there was something to this argument that I had stumbled upon in studying the Broadway musicals. And that is what led us to put our heads together to do the studies that I've been talking about. So how has it affected my own work? Well, it's led me to look for really diverse individuals to begin working with to see what kinds of new ideas we can get.
Now all that's left is for the three of you to write a Broadway musical.
Exactly.
Well, Professor Uzzi, I want to thank you very much for taking a few minutes to speak with us. It's
Not
been a
at
pleasure.
All. It's been great.